So, Laura, first up, what prompted your activism in the education world? Why did you get involved?
I don't think my story is very unusual. I grew up in a household where there was nothing more important than education. I mean, this is an old story, right? My parents were both worked for the New York City Board of Education. My dad was a social studies teacher. My mom was a social worker. And nothing mattered more than what kind of education we got. And it was not really till I had my own children that I started getting more interested in local school board politics. And that was prompted by my youngest child. I have four. My youngest, who has multiple disabilities and is classified as special ed. So I started going to school board meetings and sort of thinking about, okay, what kind of system is this that's either providing well or not providing well certain services? And then as I started studying more of the issues, I realized, well, you know what, special ed is just a symptom of a larger systemic problem. So I started paying more attention to the whole system. And at that particular point, my own home was having its struggles with its local school system, and a bunch of people got together and decided that they needed to have a change in the school board, and I was on that slate and with two other people who are still on the school board with me. This is now 8 years later. So it started out as just a very personal, specific issue, and it expanded as my own understanding of the issues expanded, because I began to see that sometimes problems that seem very localized are actually more general and more systemic.
So after
That's
8 years,
story.
Yeah, after 8 years, did you accomplish your goal? What changed? The goals that your troika of candidates set out and were elected to, how did that play out?
It played out largely successfully. So I do have to, say that if you're asking about my own personal activism, that after a couple years of being on a school board, I became so frustrated with the state that in order to preserve my own sanity, I started a blog, and that's how I think you became aware of me.
Yes.
Now I have, my goals are in sort of buckets. So I have my local school board goals, and then I have my goals as somebody who speaks more generally about New Jersey politics and policy in the world of education. So it's the bucket of my local school board goals is, it's in pretty good shape, I'd say. I think that a team of us made a difference. I think we've improved. I think the schools are the better for our activism. As far as my own personal ventings and editorials and by the way, which I keep very separate from my hometown. I think it's had a mixed impact, and I don't know where it will lead. I piss a lot of people off.
That's part of being
a
green.
And sometimes I think that's my job.
Yes.
At least they're talking about it.
So when you look at the local, getting on the local school board, when you said that you've had some success there, what specifically made the difference? I mean, was it governance changes? Was it, driving awareness of issues? Was it, curriculum changes? Was it program changes? Was it just, you know, letting things that were happening occur? Or what were the one or two things that made a difference within your local schools?
Within my hometown, you're talking about.
Yeah, so you know, when you're elected to the board, and you said things have improved. So what made those things?
What
improve?
Got better? We were able, just because of a certain synchronicity in contracts and things like that. We were able to make some really good changes in administration, and without good leaders, you're not going to have a good school system. You need to have, you know, it's the old, you know, get the right people on the bus, that whole thing. So we were able to improve our bus ridership. We because we had the right people, we were able to then improve our curriculum, improve our oversight, improve our services to all kids, to start differentiating, to take care of any compliance issues. You know, there were many different levels, and it wasn't any one person who did that. It was really a consensus in the community that there had to be changes at the school level, and it just so happened that I was one of three people who were those three people who went and ran for school board, because we have a 9-member school board that three seats are up every 3 years. Okay. And it just so happened that I was there. It didn't matter that it was me so much. It was that it was the whole, we were really simply voicing community concerns, and the community was really kind of united on this.
So, because a lot of districts change superintendents frequently. I mean, was that the key, you know, getting a new superintendent, or was it the level below?
No, I think it was part of it, certainly, and that we really took great efforts to make wise choices. I don't think it was just that. I think it had to start at the top. Mm-hmm. And by the top, both the school board and the superintendent, it had to be a real partnership of saying, we expect more, we expect excellence, and what do we have to do to get there? It had to do with strategic planning, with saying, okay, here we are here now. Where do we want to be in 5 years? And there has to be, you know, it's so easy for a school board and superintendents to start sniping at each other. I see this in other districts all the time.
Sure.
Or to get embroiled over little things that in the end aren't about kids.
Right.
And I think once you lose that focus on, is this good or bad for kids? Mm-hmm. I mean, that has to be the baseline of any discussion. And it's so hard to keep it there for a variety of reasons.
Yes.
You know, whether it's onerous state regulations or union politics or, you know, fiscal issues, which mm-hmm. loom large in New Jersey. They do everywhere, I guess.
Right.
I know. It's really hard to lose that focus, and so you need to be working together, always reminding each other that that's why you're there.
So let's turn to your own education. You know, looking back on the arc of your education, you know, what are the pros and cons, and if you were going into college today, what would you study? What would be different, given all that you know?
Well, I grew up in New York City, mm-hmm. and so I went to New York City public schools. I was born in the Bronx. I grew up in Queens, and I you know, our first model is our parents. So I saw my parents make a choice when I was getting very close to high school that we should move to go to a better district. So in other words, it was my first exposure to school choice,
right,
to public school choice. And luckily, they were able to make that choice. So I had a fine education. I went in Wisconsin College. I went to a SUNY school, which is the State University of New York. It's the public system of for New York State, and it was fine. And I went to graduate school, and I went to SUNY, and it was fine. If I was, and I have advised, certainly, how much they listen is another question, but I have, of my four children, two of them have graduated college, and one is still there, and one is in high school. I have urged them to slow down. I think that I at least felt compelled to sort of rush through without a lot of thought, and I went from one to the other. I graduated finally with a PhD early American literature. It's not a bad thing to have. It's fine thing to have. I don't know that I think I ended up there by not asking myself hard questions about what I really wanted to do. And what I do is, with my own kids or my, you know, our friends, is I say, you know, step back, take the time to decide what you really want to do.
Yeah. So what would that be? I mean, if you were 18 today, what would you study, Laura?
You know what? I'm going to... There are people who, if they listen to this, will no doubt send me some hate mail, but I would probably just do what I originally intended to, which was to go into teaching. I mean, I did end up teaching at SUNY Binghamton. I taught in a program for inner city kids who had it was a EOP program, an educational opportunity program, and it was a transitional year program where they brought up kids who really had not been exposed to a good education system and gave them a year to kind of play catch up, and I taught writing to those kids. That was extremely fulfilling and extremely hard, and I probably should have stuck with that instead of getting caught up in postmodern theory.
I understand.
So
different era, you know.
What's that?
It was a different era, right?
It was a different era, absolutely. And I should have saw that, okay, here's something I had a passion for. Here's something I'm good at.
Mm-hmm.
And not worried about the trendiness so much. Not that I was anyone to fall to it for a trend, but you know, I was on a trajectory to go be a college professor, if I had been flowing through that trajectory a little bit more thoughtfully, I think I could have been able to say, wait a minute, here's something that really works.
One follow-up on teaching. Interestingly, a few months ago in Wisconsin, the state passed a law to implement Massachusetts teacher content knowledge requirements. So to teach elementary English, Wisconsin teachers, for the first time, they really haven't had much of anything in terms of content in Wisconsin, will have to pass MTEL 90. And, you know, Massachusetts, when they implemented that in 1998, 58% of the teachers passed. This last year, 98% passed. So what's your view? I mean, should there be content requirements for teachers to teach English, math, science, or should they just say, yeah, I went to school and therefore I can teach?
Well, I think that if you're looking at teaching quality, that certainly you have to start with both our teaching colleges and the curriculum they use and what we expect our teachers to know when they start.
Mm-hmm.
I was just looking at some statistics, and it's in regard to a current dust-up in New Jersey having to do with online charter schools, which are very controversial, at least in New Jersey, and they're probably controversial elsewhere. And I was looking at some statistics about where teachers get their master's degrees, which is in New Jersey and elsewhere, brings them to a different pay scale. We put a lot of stock on our teaching credentials. In other words, the system in New Jersey pays teachers more who have master's degrees or have more credits.
Yeah, it's the same in Wisconsin. Yeah.
Yeah, everyone does. And an astounding number of teachers in New Jersey get, and nationwide, get their master's degrees on online universities.
So, anyway,
that's just sort of a way to get to move to your question, which is, what should we expect our teachers to know when they start teaching? Do I think that elementary teachers should have content knowledge of language arts? Absolutely. I think that I can't imagine someone arguing they shouldn't, that they're going to be teaching that subject. I think that only gets at the problem sideways, which is how do we attract really talented people into the teaching pool? And right now, I mean, everyone loves this figure. There's something like the people who go into teaching represent the bottom third of college students as far as their achievement goes. And I think that how do you do that? You have to pay more. You have to offer a clearer path to, you know, to a clearer path in career advancement. In other words, maybe there should be, instead of just you're a teacher, you're a teacher, you're a teacher, maybe there's some differentiation valuable there too. But yeah, I think that teachers should have content knowledge of whatever they're teaching, in addition to understanding the way kids learn and different learning styles and, you know, class management strategies and all those other things they learn.
So that's a good segue into my next question, which is, you know, what does education mean today and in 10 years? You just described online charters. What, you know, is it the same?
I don't know.
Are we going to bust kids around?
I think, you know, it's such a hard question. On the one hand, you know, there's all the, you know, we tell our kids that, at our high school, we tell our kids that the jobs they'll have in 20 years, we don't know what those are yet. In other words, technology is changing our world so rapidly that the jobs people will have in 20 years, we can't even conceive of what those are yet. And you would think that would mean that education in 10 years or whatever is going to be radically different than it is now. But on the other hand, the way education looks right now isn't really any different than it looked 100 years ago.
Exactly.
I mean, we have brick and mortar buildings. We have an agrarian
schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We have, the teacher in front of the classroom with maybe not a chalkboard, but a smart board, and the kids not with slates, but maybe with some of them with notebooks or, mm-hmm. you know, iPads or whatever. It's not really any different. I think some wits said that the only other institution that moves as slowly as education is the church. So I think that how will education look in 10 years from now? I think that it will change in regards to the use of technology. I mean, I see all around me districts that are as fast as they can implementing new policies in regards to, say, one-on-one computing devices. I mean, every district used to say, no cell phones, leave your cell phone in your locker. All of a sudden, cell phones aren't cell phones. They're ways onto the internet. They're ways onto research. They're writing implements. They're education. They're just another computing device. How do you tell a kid not to use that? So I think that aspect will change. In New Jersey, I hope that there are big changes for our really awful urban districts, which have been failing for decades.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only really qualified to talk about Jersey. I don't think that we have sort of two school systems in New Jersey. We have our really high functioning, successful, and high achieving suburban districts, and then we have where all the kids go to college and everything's, you know, it's like the Lake Wobegon effect here, but where, you know, all the kids are above average,
right,
and all the teachers are wonderful, and then we have our inner cities where the schools are lousy, and they have been for many, many years, in spite of all kinds of litigation and court rulings and extra money and extra resources, and they don't seem to change.
Right.
If anything can change quickly, then it has to be those districts. And I only see change coming to those districts not through traditional mechanisms like another, you know, state oversight committee or even more money. I think it has to come through more innovative approaches like expanding charter schools and school choice and
mm-hmm.
offering kids another option than what they have. So
yeah, we're in agreement on that, definitely. So the last question I have is more of a process question. You know, if you had
mm-hmm.
if you were your parents in that Bronx to Queens time, what process would you use to think about a school for your kids? You know, what would make the decision for you? You know, are there three or five things that you look for? You know, obviously there's all kinds of data, whether it's information
yeah.
or not is another discussion. But you know, what are the top three or four things you'd look at and say, okay, that's where I want to go? Public or private or charter or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, I think that you have to, I would start by, say if you're considering a community, I would start by getting hold of the local papers, because school issues percolate into the town, and dissatisfaction with the town, with the schools, often, you know, you see expressions of it in the town. So I think you're looking for sort of a stable community. I think that data isn't really important. I would, you know, whether, as you point out, whether it's information or not is something else, but I think you really should, I mean, just every state now has at your state department of education would have data on graduation rates and college admissions and, you know, how many kids participate in AP courses and all that kind of thing. I think that that's worth looking at. You should also look at, and every state should have this too, is the student and teacher mobility rate. In other words, you want both of those numbers to be low. If your teachers are leaving at a higher rate than expected, then there's something wrong there, and that's a symptom of a troubled system. And if that's actually more important than the student mobility rate, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that you need to talk to people, and I know that realtors often offer information. I don't know that they're always right. I really don't know. I'm not saying they're wrong. I just don't have a lot. I don't know. But certainly there's a sense in the town if the schools are good or the schools are bad. And sometimes it's not just the town, it's where in the town. If you're in a big community, if for instance you're moving to Maryland where you have county-wide districts. In other words, there's only like 21 counties in Maryland, and each of them is their own district. You know, it's not just the district, it's where in the district. So I think you have to really go there and look. I think it's hard to do this at a distance. Yeah, so sometimes, on the other hand, sometimes you get lucky. I mean, when we were moving from, my husband and I were both in Binghamton, New York, which is upstate New York, and we needed to be closer to New York City, and so we kind of drew a 50-mile radius around New York and ended up in central New Jersey because that's what we could afford, and it's, you know, and it's been fine. So sometimes it's, I hate to say this, but sometimes it's luck. And then the last thing I would say about that is that it's amazing how much a community can change an education system. So you should consider activism. if you have like-minded people who care about the same issues, it's amazing what you can change. And I think school districts go through cycles where, you know, everything's hunky-dory, and then there's some dissatisfaction, and the school board gets thrown out, and a new school board comes in, and things get better. And so you can be part of that cycle, too. So.
Interesting. Well, I really am thankful for your time today, Laura, and certainly for your activism and and your public role as well with the blog. It's great.
Thank you very much, Jim. Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
All right, I'm going to stop recording and.